Welcome back to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Strands live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Janpro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between, Janpro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. CIBC, smart everyday banking, helps you easily track your spending with confidence. Get $450 when you make the switch. Visit cibc.com/smart. All right, busy Wednesday show. As always, it is a Canucks game day. So we had the crossover in the first segment. So let's wrap up the show by going to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, March 26. And there are people telling us in the inbox that we did not adequately finish the height conversation. But right now, we'll go to the headlines. And the headline is the Canucks playoff odds take a hit last night, even though they didn't play, after St. Louis and Calgary pick up wins. And now they've got to go out and play another desperation game against the New York Islanders. Puck drop there is in just a few hours. We talked a little bit about the path to the playoffs before we had Donnie and Dolly on and with them in the crossover as well. One thing we haven't addressed that I've seen pop up a lot in our inbox today and elsewhere, you know, on social media and all that amongst Canucks fans is the idea that, well, look, St. Louis, they're just on too much of a heater, 7 wins in a row, NHL's best team since the Four Nations faceoff. They might be impossible to catch, but the team they should be aiming for are the Minnesota Wild, who are 4-5-1 in their last 10, and now 7 points up on the Canucks, and the Canucks have a game in hand. I get
Canucks
where
have a head-to-head remaining, though.
They do. That's true. I get where people are coming from, but when you start to actually do the math, you are still much more likely, with the 2 games in hand, to catch the St. Louis Blues as well as they are playing than the Minnesota Wild. Now, St. Louis gets Nashville again tomorrow, which is just like, haven't you guys played them enough already? How do you keep playing them? After that, they're kind of through the true super easy part of their schedule. Now, they did the most of it, right? They took advantage of that cakewalk schedule that they had, but their schedule does tighten up a little bit. After that, Minnesota, I've seen some people say that, well, they've got a pretty tough schedule coming up. I'm not sure I really buy that. There are some hard games and there's some back-to-backs and on the road and stuff, but you know, they've also got a bunch of non-playoff teams on there. They've got, you know, teams like the Rangers, the Red Wings that are on the outside looking in.
The Devils who are losing a ton of games.
Yeah, the Devils who are struggling right now and don't have some of their key players. You know, they've got the Islanders, the Sharks, the Ducks, the Flames. So yeah, there's some tough games in there for the Wild, but they built enough of a cushion earlier in the season that if they just go 500, I mean, it's not even a threat, really. Like, all they have to do is go 500, and they are in.
If they go 500, or honestly, even if they go 3-5-2, so 3-5-2, you grind out 2 OTLs at some point on this slate, you know, leaning on Gustafson, who's been on a tear, and you beat, let's say, the Rangers, the Ducks, and the Sharks, and you lose all your other games.
Mm-hmm.
You still get to 93 points. The Canucks need 8 wins and 11 to get to 94 points, right? 16 points on 78.
Yep.
Right? Because how many games? They also have a huge edge in the regulation win department. Like
they do. They have a
7 games.
Regulation win gap.
So even if you were to win all 8 in regulation, if you're the Canucks, you're still
you're probably not beating them. Yeah.
Here's the truth. The Athletic model, which we'll get into again later, has the Wild at 93% to make the playoffs and the Blues at 50% to make the playoffs, right? A 7-point gap with only a game in hand at this point time of the year is a massive, like, it's a chasm. An absolute chasm. The Minnesota Wild are -1,200 to make the playoffs in terms of their gambling odds. If you were to bet $100 on the Wild to make the playoffs, you would make $8. The Blues are -130.
Yeah.
Like, that gap is huge. If you're looking at the Wild and being like, that might be the best path here, that means you're giving up on the Canucks making the playoffs. I'm sorry. And we're not ready to do that as a show.
What?
Despite Jamie asking draft questions.
No, and Mike the urologist from Brockville told me that I was being subtly negative by bringing up the draft with Books. But we got Books on. He just dropped a big list. I got at least to ask. Got to see where we're going potentially here. And by the way, I said, I think 13 to 17. You can pick 17 and still make the playoffs. So I left the door open, even in that question, for the Canucks making the playoffs. But tonight it is the Canucks versus the Islanders. What should the Canucks and Canucks fans sitting down to watch this game expect from an Islanders team who, as we've said a bunch of times, is in a very similar position and also desperately fighting for their playoff lives?
Yeah, I mean, the Islanders have actually been playing pretty decent hockey here across the last little bit. They've also found themselves in a fair number of shootouts. Over the last little stretch, like they played Calgary and the Blue Jackets really tight, lost in extra time against both of those teams. They've beaten the Panthers in recently. They forced overtime against the Edmonton Oilers. Like, they've actually been playing pretty high quality hockey. They still don't have Matthew Barzal, which obviously diminishes the amount of venom that they're able to bring offensively. And we know that Barzal always plays his best games against the Canucks as a general rule. So deep and pretty quick on the back end, lacking offensive pop, but generally relatively structured up front. Bo Horvat, Kyle Palmieri, and then Simon Holmstrom, who, much like his namesake, is a handful down low beneath the hash marks. And then Sorokin. And Sorokin's the big part of this, right? I mean, Sorokin is one of those absolute game-stealing quality netminders. And so the Canucks will have to solve that. They'll have to contend with the speed that the Islanders can bring off the back end. And I think more than anything, you know, where this gets interesting is, like, if the Islanders have the same edge that the Devils had in the middle six, and you know, their fourth line's not excellent, right? Like, that's one good thing. This isn't like a team with a level of forward depth that really scares you. So that helps the Canucks. But if they can't control play an awful lot better in, like, Teddy Bluger's minutes against the middle six, it's going to be a long night for the Canucks.
Yeah. The other headline I wanted to highlight here from yesterday is IMAX piece up at sportsnet.ca, where he had a bit of a conversation with Rick Tocchet, just, you know, talking a little bit about two of the players that are putting in great efforts for the Canucks these days, obviously Quinn Hughes and Pugh Suter, but also looking back on the year as it's played out. And I'll read this quote again. You can read the piece up at sportsnet.ca right now from Ian McIntyre, who's on the road with the team. "Coaching is hard sometimes, right?" Tocchet said when asked about the strain on him. "You've got to deal with a lot of stuff, but this year, yeah, this has been really a test of adversity for myself, dealing with certain stuff. But I'm not a quitter. I'm not a guy that complains. I've got to look at myself for certain things. But yes, it has been a draining year. I can only tell you, like, for me right now, in the little over 2 years or whatever I've been here, I really feel like we're emptying the tank as a staff. That's the one thing I'm most proud about. We might not make the right decisions. Hey, there might be some flaws, but I will tell you, for me, we've emptied the tank. Whatever's come our way, you know, we're in the offices and we're grinding. So that's what I'm proud of." And I think that's a very interesting quote. And I mean, credit to IMAC for getting it from Rick Tocchet. Pretty open, pretty honest, pretty candid from Tocchet, as we've come to expect. I have been a little surprised at people trying to read the tea leaves from that quote and say, Rick Tocchet's definitely leaving based on that quote. Like, of course it's been draining. Of course. And I don't think just because it's been a draining year that should increase the chances in your head that Rick Tocchet is going to look elsewhere. He totally could. I'm not saying nothing to worry about. He's going to be back. It's an open question, but it's just based on him being upfront about, this has been a draining year. There's been a lot of stuff to deal with. It's been tough. We've really had to grind it out. I don't read anything specific into those comments that make me think more one way or another. More of it he's leaving, more of it he's staying. I think that's just Rick Tocchet being honest and kind of admitting what we all know, which is this has been an extremely trying year for all levels of the organization.
Yeah, I think more than anything, it really captions just how difficult it has been. And, you know, especially in the wake of that conversation we didn't really have after JT Miller talked about, you know, it sort of being overblown. I think what's not overblown, right? Because I don't know, and it sort of matches some of what I've heard, which is that in terms of, like, the pyrotechnics, the behind-the-scenes drama, in some ways it was more muted this year between you know the two Canucks centermen,
the principals,
than it had been in previous seasons, where like actually there had been more sort of active headbutting, metaphorical headbutting, to be clear. And I think the truth is, like, the best way to look at it is what this organization failed to do across multiple management groups and multiple head coaches was build a partnership. And you know what? It's not just the organization. It's also on these two individuals.
Yeah.
Failed to build a partnership that could work. Like, that's it. That's all it is. And we've all been through that in various walks of life, or, you know, at the end of the day, a hockey locker room is obviously very different from a corporate office or a work site or a radio studio, but you need to be able to effectively partner with the people you work with. And you've probably encountered people in your life where you're like, I can't work with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even that you like necessarily are like shouting at each other or hate each other's guts. It's just like, they never found a way to work together. And I think ultimately that had spillover effects on the entire organization and led pretty directly to Miller's departure. Navigating that in the context in which the team didn't ever want to make the trade and knew that they'd get worse making the trade, but felt they had to anyway. Yeah, I can't imagine how difficult that must have been. That then you throw in, you know, like one of your key power forwards was diagnosed with testicular cancer before the season, and you're dealing with a goaltender who's, you know, working hard to come back from injury and does, and then gets hurt again, and there's uncertain timelines, and then he comes back and gets hurt again, and managing all that, on and on through it. Like, it's wild how much different stuff, different injuries, different in and out of the lineup factors that this coaching staff has had to handle and navigate and keep spirits up and still be prepared every game. I totally understand why that would be so exhausting.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing. I don't want to be like, oh, there's nothing surprising about that, as if it's not interesting. I think it's interesting. It's just not. I don't think it should be treated as like a mind-blowing revelation.
No.
Right. Or something that really changes how we look at Rick Tocchet's future with this team.
Although, you know, there have been moments in the past in this organization's recent history where expectations haven't been met and the dynamic behind the scenes can, you know, get even more difficult to navigate. And so I think more than anything, it makes me wonder just how much more complicated it's been behind the
season
scenes,
has been,
even than the seams that we've been able to, you know, pull on. Or that have visibly shown, you know, that's sort of one thing that I sort of take away as a from it.
Yeah, that's fair. And just to tie that into the item on the broadsheet today, which I'm sure people have had a chance, but Frank Saravalli on with Halford and Brough reiterating, and this is something Frank has been pretty consistent with, just how high the respect for Rick Tocchet is out there amongst players, amongst other people around the NHL, and how many teams would be very, very excited to hire Rick Tocchet should he be available as a coach, as a coaching free agent this summer. And I will say also, Frank, specifically highlighting the connections between Rick Tocchet and Philadelphia and the potential fit there. Obviously, Tocchet's history as a player, relationship with Keith Jones, who's the president of hockey operations in Philadelphia, a guy who has obviously built a reputation to, you know, teach people how to play with structure for a young team, all of that. Some interesting dynamics there at play potentially between Rick Tocchet and Philadelphia. You can hear that interview with Frank on Halford and Brough from this morning. Okay. Lineup notes. They did have a morning skate today. I don't know if there was any independent media there covering it, so we can't really give you any updates or information on the Canucks lineup. I know Farhan Lalji was reporting that Thatcher Demko will start again tonight, so expect to see Thatcher Demko back in the crease for the Canucks. Second game in a row, and I think part of this is, hey, we've got Demko back, we got to see what we have here, he's our best chance to go on this heater. Part of it is also Kevin Lankinen needs a rest and needs a reset, so we're going to continue giving him a rest. But at this point, you know, Thatcher Demko, it's second game in three nights now. I think it's fair to already at this juncture be at least a little bit concerned about what you're going to get from Thatcher Demko. Now, not to say that he couldn't be really good and build on what he did against the New Jersey Devils, but there's just always going to, any time the workload ramps up a little bit for Demko, I think there's always going to be that level of concern about his durability and what you're going to get from him.
Well, I hope it's not always, but I do think it makes sense,
at least in the short term.
Yeah, I do think it makes sense in the short term that realistically, provided that this game ends and Demko's played the whole thing and there's no injury or setback of any kind, I think that's a good night for the Canucks goaltender, right? So now we'll raise that bar pretty quickly, I think, if he can stay healthy here for a stretch. And obviously everyone would love to see that, given how much fun it is to watch him compete, how badly he wants it, how hard he works to be out there and performing at a high level. So hopefully that's how this goes tonight.
And as I said, no information on what the lines might look like. 11-7, anything like that. I guess
power play one.
Power play one and Lekkomäki's role will be the one to watch. But as Books was saying earlier, Lekkomäki, I think maybe your best served looking at him as this situational weapon you have, right?
Yep,
you're down
exactly
in the game,
right.
Get him out there. He's a one-shot scorer, all of that, more than a guy who's going to soak up a regular shift through all 60 minutes for you.
And by the way, that's not just good strategy. That's best for Lekkomäki. I'm his 5-on-5 ice time, he can be 12th every night in among Canucks skaters in 5-on-5 ice time. Now, maybe if you're trailing all game, I'll be like, hey, I don't know that he should be playing a lot less than Nils Mann.
Yeah.
But it's going to take something pretty extreme situationally for me to criticize his usage 5-on-5. Power play one, though, I don't get it. Put him on power play one,
mm-hmm.
clearly. Like, he's not just for him or because I want to watch it. I just think he's clearly one of your best options on the flank. Like, him and Besser on the flank. That seems...
Well, especially now with Pedersen out.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, it's...
Honestly, even with Pedersen in...
That's what I mean. Even with Pedersen in, it was like, he should probably still be there.
But now,
you take Pedersen out, it's like, you got to have him on there, I think. You got to see what he can do. Like, this is a time for taking some risks
at this stage
of the season.
He's also pretty good at it. He looks sharp. He looks comfortable.
Playoff standings update. So, again, per Dom's model at The Athletic, still pretty bullish, all things considered, on the Canucks. Gives them a 25% chance to make the playoffs. As you said earlier, Blues at 50%, Flames at 28%, and Utah,
wah-wah,
indeed, all the way down at a 4% chance to make the playoffs. Notable
not
that,
dead yet.
That 1%. The Wild are at a 93% chance. So there it is, like, the door's open for them to fall out. Doesn't mean the Canucks would be the beneficiary necessarily, but it's not, they're not a lock. They're not a mortal lock at this stage. They're a heavy favorite.
93%.
No, sure, but like, they're not, you know, the teams that have the like greater than 99%.
No, they,
next to them, where it's just like, yeah, they're sleepwalking into the playoffs.
Just don't count on it.
No.
12, you know, implied probability in the gambling odds is +700 to miss the playoffs. That's a 12% chance. You know what I mean? Like, just go bet it. If you think that's too high, because the Athletic model would say that is decent value.
Yeah.
Go bet it.
Don't argue possible.
The Minnesota Wild getting the Kevin Garnett anything is possible treatment, dumb.
That's the joke.
That is desperado stuff right
That's
there.
That's the joke.
Okay, Antonio.
Canucks 5 points back of St. Louis with two games in hand. 1 point back of Calgary. The Flames have a game in hand. Betting odds for tonight.
Gambling odds. The steam. Some steam on the Canucks. The odds have narrowed a little bit. The Islanders still favorites, but only -115. Canucks -105. That's pretty close to a pick 'em. For the Canucks on Long Island, the over-under is set at 5.5. Juice on the over, +115, -135 on the under. I love the under tonight, by the way. I often like the under when the Canucks are involved, but I especially like it tonight. In terms of futures odds, just want to go through this really quick. To make the playoffs among the Western Conference teams, Canucks, +375. Utah, +1,200. Ouch.
Yeah.
The St. Louis Blues, -130, now favored to make it, which has been a long time coming for them. Minnesota Wild, -1,200, as we went over earlier, pretty much locked. And the Calgary Flames, +180.
That's the whiteboard. That is the show.
Well, just real quick.
Never mind.
+375 is roughly 20%. So Dom's model and the markets more or less agree. Dom's model's 1-4. Markets 1-5. Got to win tonight or it's going to be 1-10 real quick.
Yeah. Now that's the show. That's the whiteboard. We will wrap things up here. It's the Canucks and the Islanders at 4:30. Sat and Dan coming up with Canucks Central and then the pregame show here on Sportsnet 650.